My guest today is the Irish novelist John Banville, speaking to me from his home in Howth, just outside Dublin. John Banville is an author singularly unafraid of the stigma of hyperbole and baroque excess. His novels are littered with flamboyant pathologies, incestuous, decaying families, waifish women, inviting the whip or the hammer, and drunken, ineffectual male orphans, real or figurative, move through an atmospheric fog of decadence, drift, and dread, worthy of the great Gothic masters. Known best in America for his historical novels, Kepler and Dr. Copernicus, Banville has lately returned to the Irish setting of his earlier books, like, for example, Birchwood and Long Lankin, a fantastically sterile, degenerate place of decaying aristocracy, mythically dysfunctional families, murder, incest, drunkenness, and mega-alienation, a land of such hyperbolic scabrousness that it becomes a kind of comic, Beckettian endgame of metaphysical loss. Banville's last two novels have centered on a serial character called Freddie Montgomery. In The Book of Evidence, published in 1989, Freddie, drinking too much and down on his luck, tried to steal a painting from a squire's country house and ended up by murdering the maid with a hammer. In Ghosts, published in 1993, free after serving 10 years in prison, a life sentence in Ireland, Freddie turned up on a sparsely populated island where he had been hired as a secretary to an aging professor whose specialty was a little-known Parisian painter named Vaublin. The plot, if it can be said there is a conventional plot in Ghosts, turned on Freddie's abortive love affair with a waifish young woman dropped ashore by a drunken ferry boat captain. Now, Freddie's back in a new Banville novel called Athena, just published by Alfred A. Knopf. This time, Freddie surfaces in Dublin under an assumed name, Morrow, hired by a man called Morden, who works on a street called Rue, to authenticate a cache of 17th century paintings on classical themes. Athena is knee-deep in conventional plots. There is an art fraud plot, something out of the Rockford Files, with a cop called Hackett and a sinister transvestite gangster called Da. There's a lot of sexual obsession and sadomasochistic love between Freddie Morrow and a girl called A. And there's a tender, astringently touching subplot involving Morrow's elderly aunt Corky, not a blood aunt, the connection, moves into his dingy two-room flat to die. In the background lurks a mysterious serial killer who drains his victim's blood. And yet, for all this plottish hyperbole, Athena is a kind of echo chamber of comic despair in which everything seems fated or written by another hand, where gods toy with humans and turn them into beasts, where a miasma of solipsism hangs in a world of dream, where reality and dream haunt each other, and mysterious lost children, doubles, and putative parents hover just out of focus, though one is constantly aware of them as force fields, as emanations, magnetic, incestuous, and invisible. John Banville, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you. Did you like that?
Well, I hardly recognize myself, hardly recognize my work from your description.
Really?
Yes, I mean, people do say that my work is full of hyperbole and grotesqueries and exaggeration, but to me, my work is completely realistic. I mean, this is the world that I see when I look about me, and I think that if the reader were to look closely enough and carefully enough at his or her own world, they would see it largely in my terms. We do live in a ferocious world. We live in a kind of civilized jungle, and as I say, I see my books as a true reflection of that world.
Now, that actually makes sense to me, but in the books themselves, there's a very they're very complex constructions, full of complex thematics. There's the art, the crime, the sex, the truth, fraudulence themes, the comic plotting, and the kind of manic despair, the seediness, and the Gothic romanticism. And there's a sense in which it's a kind of hyper-reality. There's also a sense in which it seems there's a kind of humor to it all. And then, and I hate to say this because it seems sort of reductive, but there's a kind of thoroughgoing critique of modern times, of modernity.
Yes, I mean, there is a critique, there is humor, of course. I mean, I think that...
When you're sitting there, are you being serious or do you chuckle to yourself as you're writing these?
Well, of course, nobody chuckles to themselves as they write. You know, it's such a horrible business anyway. You just grind your teeth. But, no, I mean, it would be fatal, I think, to enjoy one's own work. That would be the beginning of the end. But, no, I mean, I do see the books personally, I see the Book of Evidence as a comedy which surprises and even angers quite a few people. But I do see it as a comedy in the sense that the narrator, Freddy, who is a killer and a thief and generally a bad lot.
That one of the great murder scenes in literature is when he murders that man.
Yeah, I do quite like that scene. But it is comic as well.
Yes.
In a ghastly sort of way.
Yes.
But I do see it as a comedy in that he... Because comedy to me is a form in which a character erects a vast panoply of what he thinks of as reality, which is in fact a self-delusion. And the comedy comes from the fact that he doesn't see it, that it's a self-delusion. So that, in a way, the Book of Evidence really has to be read twice. You have to read it once just to read it, and then you have to read it a second time to find out what it's about. But I think that any work of art deserves at least two looks.
Oh, yes. Just as an aside, is Morden, this other character in Athena, that's not an anagram for modern, is it?
No.
It isn't
trouble when you read a book which is full of anagrams and games and tricks that you do get paranoid and you think everything is game and trick. But sometimes, as Freud said, a cigar is just a cigar.
Okay, now in all three books, there's this concatenation of a collection of paintings, a woman who is waifish and in many ways very sexual in her vulnerability and waifishness, and Freddy, who in this last book, Athena, is called Morrow. I don't think completely penetrated what is going on here, but the paintings are all on kind of classical themes. They're paintings that date roughly from the beginning of modernity. And in Ghosts and in Athena especially, there's a sense in which in the text that you hint that the characters, or some of the characters, are people who actually, in some sense, have walked out of the paintings. Is that true?
Yes, I mean, all three books deal with painting because, I mean, the Book of Evidence says it in its title. This is evidence. This is what we look at. It's what we see. It's the surfaces of things. And I think in the Book of Evidence, Freddy says, on the surface, that's where there's real depth. And it is taking art as essentially superficial, but in a very complex usage of the word superficial. All three books are first-person narratives. They are what the first-person narrator sees. He makes no pretense to knowing what is behind the surface of what he looks at, which is essentially the state that art is in. I mean, when I hear the word psychology, I reach for my revolver. I mean, I don't believe that art is a psychological weapon. I believe that it is a matter of surfaces, but that in that surface there is extraordinary depth, so that all the books are at one level, and I emphasize at one level and not a terribly important level, but at one level they are sort of essays or excursions on the nature of art itself. And the medium that I chose is one that's as far away from the novel as it's possible to get, I suppose, mm-hmm. which is painting.
And you play constantly with this kind of rereading of the paintings and the idea that some of them might be fraudulent. Vaublin,
yes.
is a painter who in the Ghosts is his biography is given, and he's haunted late in life by someone who's imitating him.
Yes, and in Athena, the narrative is punctuated by sort of two-page descriptions,
right,
of specific paintings, and these descriptions are written as if they were catalogue entries. The style is very dry, academic, but yet, you know, sort of there are lots of jokes lurking in it as well.
Jerks and jokes and foreshadowings and reinterpretations of the actual plot that's going on.
Yes, and there are eight paintings, but there are seven descriptions. And at the end, he realizes, I think, at least I realized when I came to the end, that of course there couldn't be a description of the eighth painting because the book itself is the eighth painting.
Which is the birth
of
Athena.
And the eighth painting is the only one, I think, again, I'm not quite sure of this, but the eighth painting is the only one that is authentic.
That's
but of course authentic is a difficult word.
Right, because it could have been painted by the false Vaublin.
Yes.
That's not mentioned in the book, but of course it's always a possibility.
Yes, well, it's, of course, one of the questions about doing three linked books is that how much does each depend on the other two?
I don't think they do, but there's so many jokes and in things that it's fun to read them back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I've talked to a few people who have read only Athena, and they say, yes, it's self-contained. And they don't feel that there are two missing links. But if they were to go back and read the other two, they would get a lot of the jokes and a lot of the references. And there would be, I hope, an increase of the aesthetic pleasure, which, after all, is what one sets out to provide.